translation. A sannyasi must not present allurements of material benefits to gather many disciples, nor should he unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. He must never attempt to increase material opulences unnecessarily. Repetitively, please. A sannyasi must not present allurements of material benefits to gather many disciples, nor should he unnecessarily read many books or give discourses as a means of livelihood. He must never attempt to increase material opulences unnecessarily. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. So-called swamis and yogis generally make disciples by alluring them with material benefits. There are many so-called gurus who attract disciples by promising to cure their diseases or increase their material opulence by manufacturing gold. These are lucrative allurements. These are lucrative allurements for unintelligent men. A sannyasi is prohibited from making disciples through such material allurements. Sannyasis sometimes indulge in material opulence by unnecessarily constructing many temples and monasteries. But actually, such endeavors should be avoided. Temples and monasteries should be constructed for the preaching of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, not to provide free hotels for persons who are useful for neither material nor spiritual purposes. Temples and monasteries should be strictly off limits to worthless clubs of crazy men. In the Krishna consciousness movement, we welcome everyone who agrees at least to follow the movement's regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, and no gambling. In the temples and monasteries, gatherings of unnecessary, rejected, lazy fellows should be strictly disallowed. The temples and monasteries should be used exclusively by devotees who are serious about spiritual advancement in Krishna consciousness. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the word Aramban as meaning Matadi Vyaparan, which means attempts to construct temples and monasteries. The first business of the sannyasi is to preach Krishna consciousness. But if by the grace of Krishna facilities are available, then he may construct temples and monasteries to give shelter to the serious students of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, such temples and monasteries are not needed. Om Gyana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ammilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in this verse, there are four things mentioned that a sannyasi should not do. One was to present material allurements, to attract disciples by material allurements. The second was to read many books. The third one was to make a living by speaking, giving discourses. And the fourth one was to attempt to increase unnecessary opulences. These four things have been described here. Interestingly, in the purport, it seems that Srila Prabhupada has only really highlighted two of these four. In the first part of the purport, Srila Prabhupada gets right into heavy. I mean, actually, the purport is very heavy words. So-called swamis and yogis. In other words, there are many people that call themselves swamis, controllers of the senses, and yogis, people with mystic power, and they attract followers by alluring them with material benefits. And I mean, there are some famous people, or infamous, as you may wish to call them, who somehow have the ability to they can somehow bring gold. They have the ability to produce gold or other opulences. Some mystic power. And people are actually quite amazed by it. They're quite bewildered. And actually think this is a proof of the person's spiritual divinity because they can manufacture gold. But Prabhupada has used the word so-called, very heavy. I mean, what would we have known had we not come across a real Swami? How would we have known what a real Swami is? We thought, yes, it must be. He must be fantastically wonderful and holy because he can produce gold. Another thing is, this is also by offering people, I can cure your disease. We hear in the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there was such a yogi who actually had the ability to cure people's diseases. People would go to him and he would cure their diseases. He would also dance with their wives in the dark of night, but he would also be able to cure diseases. So people were very enchanted. He must be Lord Vishnu or an incarnation of Lord Vishnu because of his wonderful mystical abilities. But their interest was to gain followers and gain reputation themselves. Now, sometimes, even in a kind of Western setting, we may not use the word swamis or yogis, but sometimes there are leaders who are in the guise of spiritual leaders who are also inducing people for their material opulences. Sometimes you can go to read various things or hear various things. And people are saying, yes, the proof of the authenticity of this system of spirituality, religiosity, is that you become opulenced. It's a very heavy thing. They preach it. And then when they preach it, they say, okay, now give me some money. They want to have some money. I heard one presentation, and there were three preachers, and they all went to a certain rendezvous or something to do some kind of preaching. And they're all talking about how they all went into the airport with their own private jets. And the speaker was showing that this is authentic. I'm a messenger of God. Then I have this, more or less, this is what I'm entitled to. Now, it's interesting because on Sunday we were hearing about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, who had a Rolls-Royce car? I think there's a picture of him in a Rolls-Royce car, I think it is, upstairs. And he wore a Savile Row coat, and he wore leather shoes. So what would happen if Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was today in the 21st century? Would he have a private jet? I don't know. Do a physical conceal. Anyway, some people, they, in the name of being a religious leader, they try to induce people. Yes, if you come to me, you will get material opulence. I'll cure you of your diseases. I'll sort out your problems. But Prabhupada said, this is so cold. He says, this is heavy words for unintelligent men. Why is that unintelligent? Why is it a sign of unintelligence if you get gold, if you cure your diseases? Today we think, that's not intelligent, that's great. Why am I unintelligent if I go to this person and he cures me of my diseases? Of course, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that may shed light on it. Bahunam jamanamante gyana vam mamprapadyeta Vasudevi Salmiti Sur Mahatma Sudulaba. This says Gyanavam Bahun after many births, Bahunam Jamanamante, after many births, Vasudeva Savamiti. Vasudev, you're everything. So Gyanavam, Gyanavan means possessor of Gyan, one who possesses knowledge, Prapadyante, he surrenders to Krishna. This is the actual understanding of Gyan. From the basic Krishna's perspective, nowadays, modern man's perspective will have their own ideas what is advancement. And they will say, yes, we have cured a disease. That's what they'll say, or we're trying to cure a disease. And have they cured it or not cured it? Have they just suppressed it? Have they something else come out? There's a plant in my garden. It's a tree. But if you cut it, it starts shooting out in other places. Sometimes the weeds are like that. You cut the weed off and then it comes up in other places. It's so it's so kind of virile, it wants to kind of come up. And we were hearing, we have a gentleman coming to do hedge laying. And what they do is they cut the hedge 3/4 through, they bend it over. And then the root, you get 4 or 5 new seedlings coming up. So sometimes like that with diseases, you try to cure it in one way, but it comes out another way. So oftentimes they deal with the disease and then they suppress all the symptoms. So nowadays, you're considered to be a jnani, a modern jnani, or a modern yogi, or a modern swami, if you can somehow save people from the material allurements. If you go, I mean, think about it. If you go to your spiritual master, what would you ask for? What would you ask for? If you went to a holy man, what would you ask for? Please save me from my difficulties. I'm suffering. This person did this to me. I'm not being treated well. It's kind of that's one level. So people, there are people who are very expert and they're alluring things. They're trying to get people to be their followers for material reasons. Now sometimes in our society, we also may find, we may notice related things that a person, they may want a particular guru. Let's turn it the other way. What's interesting here is this is talking about shishya, disciples. Another point, this is interesting because if you read this book as it is, without twisting anything or trying to reinterpret it, this verse talks about a person taking disciples. So nowadays there's a controversy about Ritviks and things like that. But if you look at this verse as it is, what it tells you is that there's a sannyasi who is making disciples. He's got his own disciples. That's what the natural reading of this verse says. And it's like that. And even earlier on, when we're talking about brahmacharis, there he was talking about the guru having a wife. So there the grihastha was also a spiritual master with disciples. So the natural reading is that there's a teacher and he's got disciples. Just a side point. So sometimes there is a kind of subtle sense of material opulence. I want to be associated with this particular guru because he's very popular. And if I'm his disciple, I'll also be part of the popular group. This is also an allurement. So sometimes if you want disciples, you may induce certain things. I'm going to induce this kind of material aspiration in my disciples, that they're part of a big group. So therefore, one has to be, there's a qualification there for being a disciple. What is it that you want? If you want to be part of a group, you've got a nice picture on your altar, then people are going to come in, oh, you're a disciple of this particular guru. And you get some opulence, you get some prestige from it, because what do you mean? You're a disciple of that one? He's only got one disciple, or three, or four. That's not very... So there's a kind of material opulence. So a sannyasi, he's not meant to present any allurements of material benefits, neither of gold or medicine or even these things. Because what's interesting, if you go back to the first verse in this chapter when Narada Muni starts speaking, what is the duty of a sannyasi? A person able to cultivate spiritual knowledge, to renounce all material connections, and merely keeping the body inhabitable, he should travel from one place to another, passing only one night in each village. In this way, without dependence in regard to the needs of the body, the sannyasi should travel all over the world. So a sannyasi's got nothing to do. He's basically just saturating himself in Krishna consciousness. So these are, you could say, how Maya sneaks into the mind of a sannyasi. That's it, I'm going to give up the world. And as soon as you give up the world, suddenly the whole world is interested in you. When the sannyasi walks in, there's like a kind of wave of people offering obeisance as he walks down the corridor. Now imagine, we experience that. Someone comes to Prabhu, please accept my humble obeisances. Prabhu, you are such a wonderful person. When you walk by, my life lights up. If someone said that to us, we'd go, oh yeah, so finally. So imagine you're a sannyasi. You're a sannyasi and everyone's bowing down to you. So it's very easy to fall into this. Let me act in a way that I can keep these interested persons coming. So this is, Bhagavatam is saying, no, this is forbidden. It's forbidden to offer inducements, material inducements to your disciples, whether it's gross like gold or curing their diseases, or even these subtle things. Grantham, I'll go to the one that Prabhupada goes into also here, which is interesting. Who would have known this is what it meant? Narambhan arabet quachit. He says, never nor unnecessary opulences, arabet, should attempt to increase at any time. Who would have thought that meant opening temples? We thought, yeah, of course, a sannyasi should open temples. But Srila Prabhupada, he seems to be here. He's experienced something that we may not have experienced. Of course, because we're used to it, we join a temple, and there's always been a very strict, we hear it, no lazies and crazies. We hear it from the very first day of our movement, practically speaking. We can't have anyone who can't go to the morning program or follow these. We've heard these things, so it's not easy for us to recognize. But Srila Prabhupada is aware of something in his experience where there were places where full of people that were basically just, as Prabhupada says, living in a free hotel. And actually, Prabhupada did say that one time. He saw some frivolous association between men and ladies, I think, in the gardens at the frontier. And he probably was very conscientious about it. He said, don't turn it into a brothel or don't turn it into a hotel or something like that. So it's very important that those who live in the ashram, live in the temple, have to lead a very strict life. This is what's required. Those who are serious about spiritual consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada has had experience where people were just living comfortably. I mean, let's face it, you live in the temple, you get three meals a day. You don't have to cook it. Someone's going to cook it for you. They lay it out. You can even now set your own menus, what you want to eat. I mean, earlier on in the Brahmacharya ashram, we meant to just not eat if you weren't called, and whatever comes in front of you, that's what you eat. Nowadays, we have not criticism, just a little joke there about it. But anyway, so you can live very comfortably, and people understand that. Oh, yes, I can actually. And probably once that he says, you can come. Anyone, the whole world can come and join our movement. But you have to be strict. You have to seriously want spiritual life. This is the other side. If you're willing to live a strict life, you can come, you can eat nicely, you'll be taken care of, you'll have a nice central heated rooms with hot water, a special room for drying your clothes, all those things. No anxieties. You don't need it. Everything's going to be taken care of you. Just by rising early, an austere life, and so sometimes people want to take advantage of it. So probably these are very heavy terms. Crazy men, worthless clubs of crazy men. He didn't want our temple to be full of, he wanted people to be, people who, when you meet a devotee, you're meant to feel Krishna's presence by the presence of the devotee. And that means they're trying to go back to Krishna. They're trying to cultivate their relationship with Krishna. So Shiva, he's very heavy, Shiva. He wants our temples to be pure, to be beacons of the spiritual realm. So therefore, things are very strict. And if we take our foot off the pedal, then we go to the easy life, and then we'll fill it up with... In other words, if you offered a place like that, where you can... We're open for crazy people. We're open for people who aren't actually innocent. The place will be full. So no, we're only interested in very strict people. So temples and monasteries. So sometimes it may be a tendency, because you become famous. I opened a temple. This temple was built by so-and-so. Then suddenly you become a famous thing. So it's possible that sannyasi may think, actually, I'll open a temple and I will become the center of interest because I've opened this temple. Prabhupada often, in a similar light, he often talks about opening hospitals. Some people, they renounce the world and they start opening hospitals, kind of a humanitarian activity. And as Hare Krishna movement, we also sometimes open hospitals. So someone has a question, how far are we going here? So there's often a debate about this. Now we're opening schools. Opening schools, opening hospitals. Now we're opening schools. So a sannyasi, he's not interested in opening schools or opening hospitals. He's interested in people going back home, back to Godhead. So therefore Prabhupada says, if there's an opportunity, if by the grace of Krishna facilities are available, then he may construct temples and monasteries to give shelter to the students, serious students of Krishna consciousness. So it's not saying don't open temples. It's saying open the right kind of temples for the right kind of persons. Grantham naiva byased bahun. This in one sense is, it's a little different than the previous verse yesterday. Govinda was saying, that was not such shastresu sajeta. Don't become attached or indulge in reading asat shastra, untruthful literature. And he gave a whole list there of newspapers, novels, dramas, and fiction. This one says, grantam naiva byased bahun. Grant, we may have heard the word grant in the Sikh religion. Guru Granth Sahib. You go to the Sikh Gurdwara and they have a book that they worship. So that may be where we heard the word grant. Isn't there a Grant Samadhi for the Sanatana Goswami or something? Anyone in Vrindavan? Anyway, it means... Yes? Damodar Temple. There's a place where they have the books, in some certain books that Goswami wrote in a Samadhi. So it means literature. Now Prabhupada says, unnecessary literature, naiva byased bahun, should try to understand or cultivate many, bahun, many books. So in one sense, we can easily understand, yeah, we should reject all these asat shastras. That we can kind of understand, that's understandable. That was explained yesterday. But this has been trying to read many books. That may also indicate there are many books that we could read that we probably shouldn't be reading. If you try and read too many books, and why are you trying to read too many books? For what purpose? We say, Prabhupada very happily says, there is one book that you need. Bhagavad Gita. Everything you need is in Bhagavad Gita. Then he says, another book that you need is a Srimad Bhagavatam. 18,000 chapters. How many people have read the whole Srimad Bhagavatam? All 12 cantos. Three people. Four maybe. 12 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Who's read the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita? Three. Four maybe. Then there's the Nectar Devotion, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Then there's all these small books. So these are the original, these are the books that Prabhupada wrote. Now there's so many, I mean few weeks you go by, there's a new book in the reception here. Another book written by another Goswami, other books written by devotees. We heard on Sunday that Creedmoor said we should all write something. So how are we going to read all this? But a sannyasi, he can't spend his whole time reading everything, so it can be distracting for him. And why is one reading all those different books? For what purpose? I want to find something really different. So you might want to find a different verse or a different sloka to gain interest in a class. That's the duty of a teacher. You want to make the class interesting so people can follow and pay attention. But you also may want to do it because you may want prestige. So this can actually be an anartha for a sannyasi to try and think of something different. It's a possibility. Another thing here is navyakyam upayundita. Nor discourses should make as a means of livelihood. Of course, a sannyasi is not meant to have any livelihood. Who takes care of a sannyasi? Grihastha ashram? The whole society? Krishna. That was the opening verses in one sense. He's meant to be just wandering out in the world and feeling how Krishna takes care of him. Sannyasi is fearless. I mean, can you imagine? walking out the door and not knowing where you're going to sleep that night, and having complete shelter of Krishna as a consequence. Sometimes we hear Sankirtan stories like that. I think we heard some like that, where devotees, they go out, they're not sure what's going to happen that night, and suddenly they take care of them. I had a little experience like that. I was a young devotee, and Dhanavir was the Sankirtan leader. Not Sankirtan, he was the Bhakti leader. So we had us going down to Bournemouth, I think it was. And they were doing kirtan right there. There's a park near the beach. And he was leading this beautiful kirtan, and all these people were just like thronging, listening to this beautiful, you know, Dhanavir's around a nice singer. He was thronging there. And then one lady came up. She was a Jewish lady. She invited us to her house. I think her parents weren't there. Anyway, it's a bit of an embarrassing story in one sense, because anyway, she invited us. We made prashadam there. Of course, the kitchen was a bit of a devastation after. But it's interesting how just by preaching, this lady came over and she said, come to my house, and we had a place to go and had prashadam. So imagine a sannyasi every day like that, that he feels that he's in the hands of God. Now, what we're going to hear later on is about a python, the meditation of a python, where a sadhu, he just sits in one place and sees what destiny brings. And actually, when Narada Muni met him, he was actually described as being a bit fat, a bit stout was the word he used. In South Africa, they call you very healthy if you're a bit overweight. Somehow he was a bit stout. Now, generally, it describes if a sannyasi is large, there's something not quite right. A sannyasi is not meant to be large. It's meant to be slim, because it means there may be too much consumption going on. I don't know if it's still the case, but in the Brahmacharya Ashram, there used to be a sign on the scales. There was a scale, I remember seeing a scales, and it said, you measure your prasadam intake here. You go on the scale, you can see how much prasadam you've been eating. So, a sannyasi, he lives by knocking on door to door. The vanaprastha, the previous ashram, they live in the forest, and actually they can have a cottage. But although it's described that the cottage there is to keep the sacred fire protected, but presumably he would also live in a cottage. And he was allowed to collect some types of foods, and then if he got new food, he would discard it. So there's a certain amount of breaking free, because a grihasta, no grihasta has enough. Every grihasta wants more. That's the whole nature. They want to accumulate, store for the future, and store for the future they can't see. They never have enough money. They always want more money. You go into from a brahmacharya ashram, you go in a grihasta ashram with a bag. You finish with a truck, truckload of stuff. So the grihasta ashram, they're accumulating. So vanaprastha is kind of breaking his hand, breaking that attachment to actually, I don't need all this stuff. Why do you need a house made of brick? Why can't you live in a house made of mud? I'm not sure I told this story last time I gave class, but I was reading about the Wild West times, and there's a young couple. I think the man was 18 and she was 16, and he wanted to marry her. And she says, yes, I'll marry you if you build me a house. So this 18-year-old man got his ox cart, six oxen and a cart, a wagon. A cart's got two wheels, a wagon's got four. And off he went to the west coast of America, or wherever it was they were settling. So this young 18-year-old man was trekking across these wild plains, and then he went to wherever they settled, and he built his wife a house. So a vanaprastha is meant to make a vow of 12 years, 8 years, 4 years, 2 years, or 1 year, and then live in this place, but he has a cottage. But a sannyasi can't have a cottage. He goes out there and see what God provides. Now, sometimes in our ISKCON society, not sometimes, the sannyasis don't have to worry. As long as they get to his temple, they'll be fully taken care of. They get the best room, the best facilities, they'll have someone iron their clothes. So it can actually mean you can actually become dependent. But a sannyasi is meant to be independent. I'm not dependent on anything. We generally hear that sannyasi goes door to door begging. and for the benefit of preaching to the people. In one purport, Prabhupada writes that a sannyasi doesn't have to go begging, or a sadhu doesn't have to go begging door to door, because he lives in the lap of nature. In other words, Krishna is providing food everywhere. We had this workshop one time with Smita Krishna Maharaj. And what he had, I can't remember the name of it. But he had one devotee who was playing the role of Mother Bhumi. And then, some kind of, anyway, can't remember that word. But they basically, then devotees, they kind of positioned themselves around this devotee who was playing Bhumi. And they asked Bhumi questions. And some of the things that Bhumi would say was, basically, all your needs are being taken care of. I'm providing everything that you need. But we doubt that sometimes. We, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm the healing herb. Nowadays, we don't have any concepts of the healing herb. We have to go to the chemist. Did you know, for example, that I think it's aspirin, comes from a willow tree? Or at least that's where that kind of idea came from. So a lot of times, they're nicking what nature's providing, putting a label on it, manufacturing it, officially banning you from using herbal medicines, and they're making loads of money on the basis of these things. But Krishna says, I'm the healing herb. So we're not, the difficulty we're in, that we're so distanced from a natural life that we don't even know how to live. You often hear in India, for example, young boys, they just leave home and off they go. Just off they go. And they're taken care of. We're so artificialized that we don't know how to live without a supermarket. We actually don't know what to eat. What can I eat naturally? Will it poison me, or can I eat it? It's described that you would eat roots and herbs. Do we know what roots to eat? What can we eat? So a sannyasi presumably would have this kind of understanding to go out what to eat. Of course, they would knock on the door. Please give me this. I mean, imagine that. Going. Anybody done that? Knocked on a door for begging for your own sustenance? So I did see it one time in India. Devotees were going, knocking on the doors of some of the bridge bassies. I mean, personally, I find it a little disconcerting. I thought, here's a wealthy Westerner knocking the door of a bridge bassie, asking for a roti. I mean, it was kind of interesting to have the experience of doing it, but I didn't do it myself. I heard of people doing it. But a sannyasi, he's not reliant, he's relying on God. So I think there's probably a rule there. You're allowed to knock on a certain number of doors, and after that, that's it. That means sometimes you may go hungry. We certainly heard in terms of Prahlad Maharaj, Parikit Maharaj, when he was on his journey, sometimes it described how he's suffering from thirst and hunger. Now, of course, if you're traveling along a great distance, then how would you forage along the way? So generally, if you want to forage, you have to stop and slow down and scavenge like that. But a sannyasi is reliant on God. So, vyakyam upayonjita. A sannyasi is not dependent on anything. So if he may think, actually, if I go and give a nice class, if I speak some erudite philosophy, people are going to give me money. Now, I was speaking to Jayadwaita Maharaj, and he mentioned... Or someone told me that, maybe a disciple told me that he always has $2,000. And if anyone gives him more money, he basically donates it to the local temple. And he was reflecting how he's one of the kind of, I suppose, not high profile swamis. He's high profile, everyone knows Jayadwaita Maharaj, but he's not like, he's not, when he comes, the temple isn't bulging at the seams to get in. He comes in the normal people here. But he was mentioning, I think in 1 year he gets like $25,000 or something. In other words, if you're a sannyasi, people give you money. Now imagine if you can speak very erudite and then suddenly more people come. So there's a possibility you may think, well, I can make good income this way. I can have lots of savings and accumulate lots of wealth by giving a discourse. I'll speak Krishna consciousness and I can make my livelihood this way. So this is Maya. So these are four, you could say, Mayas of a sannyasi. Warnings, forbidden activities. Don't aspire, don't try and accumulate disciples for material benefits. Don't read many books, unnecessarily many books. Even many authentic books, Vedic books. There are four, I think I read in one of the Sandarbhas, there are 400,000 verses of the Puranas on earth. In the heavenly planets there are more. So we struggle just reading 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam. What to speak of all the 400,000 verses? Who's read the Mahabharata? The original Mahabharata, 100,000 verses. So we already have immense literature already. So it can be distracting for a sannyasi to go down that route of trying to read too many books. Also, should not be speaking to create followers or as a means of making a livelihood. And shouldn't increase unnecessarily opulences. Okay, so what can we learn from this? These are questions for you, our audience. This is about sannyasis. So what can we learn in our lives? What messages can we take from these warnings of a sannyasi?